ラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタン。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
This week, we're chatting all about sewing toolkits. What are our favorite items to work with? What does a beginner sewist need to get started? What if you are tackling your first pair of jeans or bra? If you've been sewing for a while, we also suggest tools to help you level up.
Time for an upgrade. This episode is sponsored by Folkwear. Folkwear provides high-quality sewing patterns based on authentic vintage and folk clothing from around the world. Folkwear has over 90 patterns in its collection that cater to women, men, and children.
Their sewing patterns are loved by home sewists, reenactors, and anyone who loves to sew with creativity and connect with culture. Go check out Folkwear at folkwear.com and get 20% off your order with the promo code LOVETOSEW. That's folkwear.com, promo code LOVETOSEW. And now, on to the show. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm really excited to share all of my favorite tools with everybody.
Me too. Preparing for this episode was more fun than I thought it would be. Getting to go through my toolkit and see all my favorite things and a lot of stuff that I've had for a long time made me realize that you just don't need that many things to be good at sewing. And there's just a selection of things that are nice to have.
Mm-hmm. And it can be so overwhelming at the beginning when you're starting to sew. So I'm hoping some beginners will listen to this episode and feel prepared to get what they need.
Yes, absolutely.
But before we get to the show, let's have a little catch up.
Yeah. I think when this episode drops, we're going to be in New York City.
Ooh.
So we'll have to try and post some photos because we're actually going to meet up with our new podcast assistant, Melanie, in Brooklyn, because it was easier for her to fly there than to fly across the country to visit us. So we're meeting in New York.
Yeah. What a glamorous thing. Just meeting in New York. Just for a few days.
Yeah.
It's going to be so fun, though. I'm really excited to finally meet Melanie in person. We get to see her face every week on our little Google Hangout when we touch base. And we talk to her all the time on Slack. But we never get to hang out with her face to face. So it's going to be fun.
It's going to be amazing. What else is new?
Just the usual craziness of life.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. How about you?
Same.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to report. My branding launch went well, and I'm really excited about that. But I talked about that last week. So
congrats. Yeah. We have some stuff like in the works at Blackbird, but I'm not ready to talk about anything official yet. But it's let's just say good. Exciting things are happening.
Yay. But we did want to talk to you guys briefly about Patreon, because we've added a new tier to our Patreon options. So you can support us for $2 a month, if you just want to give us a little love and you don't need any extras, you're just happy if you can donate a little bit of money every month, which is so helpful for us. You can also support us at $5 a month and get our bonus episode that comes out every month. The first Friday of every month, we do a bonus episode. We talk about everything we're sewing, everything that's been going on behind the scenes, a little bit more of our personal lives. We're a little more opinionated.
Ooh, and we're going to actually have a little preview of one of our bonus episodes at the end of this episode. So you guys can give it a little listen and see if you like it.
Yeah.
I hope you do.
And if you do, then you can go support us at patreon.com/lovetosew. But what about the third tier?
Ooh, well, we should also mention that now with the $5 level, you'll get behind the scenes photos.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah. So we're trying to just share more on like the Patreon feed, give you guys a little bit more value with the money that you are offering us every month, which is so great. And we appreciate it so much. So we're going to start posting some behind the scenes photos. I think we've already made a post about that, but we're trying to take more photos and you guys will get exclusive viewing rights, I guess, to those photos.
Some pictures of Caroline and I working out at the gym.
Oh yeah, we did some photos at the gym today. So very much like not edited, airbrushed, just like total raw behind the scenes footage of us. Also us podcasting and us when we're just like hanging out and doing things that we talk about on the show and especially on Patreon.
Yeah.
But the exciting thing is that at the $10 level, we've added an extra perk. So now if you support us at $10 or more a month, you will get an exclusive discount code for our shops. And that's like always. So every quarter we'll give you a new code and you'll be able to use it for 15% off store-wide in both of our shops. Really straightforward. And honestly, if you already shop with us, that's kind of going to pay for itself. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty excited to be able to offer that. And hopefully it'll entice some of you to go the extra mile and give us 10 bucks a month. Mm-hmm. And we would be so appreciative of that.
We have some more exciting things coming for the $10 tier as well, but we're not ready to share yet.
Oh yeah. We're with Melanie on board now. We're just like working around the clock at making sure that we're offering the best value we can to our Patreon supporters and just like everything is so great with Melanie.
Well, I mean, I'm sure some people listening saw her tutorial video that she did on her Instagram, which blew us away. It was so good. It was better than anything I could have done. Yeah. I was so impressed.
Yeah, blown away.
So we're going to kind of harness that for our Patreon supporters as well. So look out for that.
Yes, definitely. But is it time to get to some feedback maybe?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So our first piece of feedback is from Melissa. Hello, ladies. I love your podcast and I listen to every episode, usually while doing chores or driving, but I almost never remembered to go back and check the show notes for all the great information there. A new podcast I just started listening to mentioned that people subscribe to the newsletter get the show notes sent right to their inbox. Any chance you might do that in the future? I just signed up for your newsletter. If sending out show notes isn't part of the plan for that mailing list, maybe you can make another one for emailing show notes out. Even if it's just a couple of links in your newsletter for the show notes of the most recent episodes, it would be so awesome. All the best, Melissa. So this is a great suggestion and the timing is right because we were just kind of brainstorming about ways that we can make our newsletter more exciting for our listeners and our subscribers. So definitely the show notes are always linked in the newsletter. So you'll get that newsletter in your inbox every week for each episode, and we will have the show notes linked in there. So you'll just have to click a button. It'll take you right to the website where all the show notes are. We also plan to start adding some of our favorite links, some highlights from the show notes directly in the newsletter. So that's coming up. And we also just started adding items to our Amazon storefront. So as kind of influencers, we were offered the opportunity to have an Amazon storefront where we can link products that we use often and have it all in one place for you guys. We suggest stuff all the time on the show, and sometimes it can be hard to dig those things up in the show notes. So we were really excited to be able to put them all in one place on Amazon. I know a lot of you guys shop on there, and hopefully it'll help you find the things that we suggest more easily.
Yeah, and even if you don't want to shop on Amazon, we totally get that. It's about having a place where people can go to find the things that we recommend. It's like, what was that iron that Caroline said she loved? What was that chalk pen that Helen was talking about in that episode? The ones that we love are all going to be in there. And so you can just go there and check it out and you can buy if you want and you can shop elsewhere if you want, whatever works for you.
Yeah. So products, books, a lot of the tools that we're recommending on the show today are also going to be on our Amazon storefront. So it's exciting. It's a fun step, I think, in the right direction.
It totally is.
Have more resources for you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. We also have a question via voicemail from Honey.
Hi, Caroline and Helen. This is Honey from Montana. I love your podcast. I found it about a year ago and got brave enough to try to sew some garments after being a longtime quilter. I absolutely loved it. I was addicted right from the beginning, and I'm now making, you know, the highest quality clothing I've ever had, I've ever owned. I've never had such awesome clothes, and I just absolutely love this new direction that sewing has taken me. But I had a couple questions. My first question relates to, you guys often talk about sewing for the season, and I'm curious if that's what everybody does, because I've found myself doing something quite the opposite. I find myself sewing for the season that has just passed because I know exactly where the holes are in my wardrobe, and I'm like, okay, so that's what I need. This is what I need. I'm going to start looking for a pattern that would fill that hole in my wardrobe. And I also find the idea of sewing for the current season really paralyzing because it's a lot of pressure to get it done in time, and it got to fit right, and it's got to be soon because the season could be over by the time I get it done. And so anyway, I'm just curious if anybody else does that. My second question has to do with rotary blades. I go through way more rotary blades now that I'm sewing garments than I used to when I was making quilts. And I'm just curious if I'm doing something wrong or if that's normal. Somebody said there might be dust on my mat, or the rotary blade could be hitting my pattern paper or my table or all three. And that certainly could be the case. I know sometimes I do nick the table or whatever, but it seems that I need a new rotary blade way more often than I should. And I'm just curious if you had any tips for me. Thanks. Have a nice day.
Thanks for your voicemail, honey. Those are really good questions.
Yeah, and we're so happy that you tried garment sewing and that you're addicted. That's exactly what we're going for.
Yeah, I had to laugh when I was listening back because I also tend to sew things for the season that just passed, but kind of inadvertently because I'm always in denial and I'm like, I'll just sew one more thing and then I don't end up wearing it until the following year. But I thank myself that following year.
True.
Being like, oh, I'm so glad I made this pair of like teak colored lander pants in May that I can now wear in September.
It's hard to figure out sometimes, like, if you're sewing for the current season, that's probably what most people do because you're most excited about what's happening right now. But it's good to sew for the future. But if you're sewing for the future, it can also be the past. Mm-hmm. Because if, say, at the end of summer, you were to write down all the holes and then in the spring, you sew those things for the summer, which is the future, but also for the past.
This is a mind bender.
I love the idea of recognizing the holes and filling them, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say. But mm-hmm. we could be recording that somewhere and then, you know, you don't have to sew summer clothes in September. You could sew the summer clothes in the spring, but then reference back to what you made a note of in September.
But also, I think everyone has like, I think everyone has a different flow and a different style of sewing. And you do you. Like, your sewing practice is your sewing practice. If you like sewing garments right after the season's over because it's fresh in your mind and you see the holes, then like, why not? Any sewing is good sewing.
And you're ready because you've bought all the fabric and it's all there and nice and new and shiny.
Yeah, the only time I wouldn't do that, I know we've had listeners write in and talk about how their weight tends to fluctuate or their measurements change like month to month. So if you're that type of person where, you know, your measurements might change fairly often, then I probably wouldn't sew for, you know, 6 months ahead or a year ahead because you really don't know where you're going to be then. But other than that, like, yeah, do it.
I like it.
Okay. I also love the rotary blade question because it is one of those things. Rotary blades get dull pretty quickly, especially when you're cutting a lot of fabrics, different weights of fabrics, different fibers have different strengths. So keeping that in mind, I love buying rotary blades in bulk mm-hmm. and just always having them on hand so that if a blade gets dull, I just switch it out. And when you buy them in bulk, it ends up being cheaper per blade. It's not as big of a deal. You definitely want to make sure that you're not cutting over pins or any other kind of metal tools or anything like that, especially, you know, that's going to dull your blade. That could make a nick in your blade and make it difficult to have those blades last longer.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts on the blades?
Not quite sure why hers would be such a struggle regularly. Maybe it was a faulty pack of blades is a thought, but other than that, not really. I mean, I do replace mine quite frequently. And I've noticed in sewing classes when I'm teaching people, they use our rotary cutters at the workshop that have the sharp blades in them. And they're like, oh, this is what a rotary cutter should feel like. And it's like, yeah, you do need to replace the blade regularly because mm-hmm. you want that sharp blade. You want that feeling cutting through fabric. It should feel effortless. You shouldn't mm-hmm. have to like go back and forth 10 times.
Mm-hmm. But if you're cutting like coating or velvet or corduroy or maybe like a heavy denim, then that blade is going to dull much quicker and you might even have to change it between projects.
Exactly.
You know? So keep that in mind depending on the materials that you're working with.
Yeah.
That could just be the cause of it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And also go for the higher quality blades. Like I've seen on Amazon, sometimes they sell like the no name or the, you know, the cheaper brand of blades. But if you have like an Olfa rotary cutter, Olfa blades are probably what you want to go with. Like I find a higher quality blade lasts longer.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we get into this toolkit discussion, mm-hmm. We just want to mention that we do not cover all of the items that you need. There are just so many different tools that you could use in your sewing room, but we wanted to share the tools that we personally see value in and that we think might be worthwhile for our listeners to check out.
I mean, I think we are going to share all of the tools you'll need to sew a basic garment.
Yes.
It's more that we're not going to share all the tools that exist.
Yeah. But I mean, unless we forget something.
Yeah. And there are some essentials that are not mentioned in any of the toolkits because you will need things like a sewing machine, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can also hand sew, but you're probably going to need a sewing machine. And if you're listening to this episode and you haven't purchased a sewing machine yet, we do have a whole episode about sewing machines, episode 83, and then a following one about overlockers and sergers as well, if you want to go crazy and get both.
Oh, yeah.
Do
We're going to link those in the show notes. And then, of course, you'll also need an iron and ironing board. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that we're not going to mention today, but definitely essential if you are going to get into garment sewing.
Yes. And we will put one in our little storefront that we love. We both love. So it's a good choice if you're looking for one.
Yeah. So I thought it would be fun to start off just mentioning what our favorite tools are, like our top tools.
Okay. Top five?
Top five.
Okay. I love my applique duckbill scissors. Mm-hmm. I just love, 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 love them. I use them all the time for everything. I mean, not everything, but I use them for grading seams, of course. That's what they're super handy for. But I also really love them for cutting notches because they are super sharp, super sturdy. I got the Ganger ones. Again, avoid the off-brand ones. Just get the like nice, sturdy applique scissors. I also love these purple thread snips that I have. I can't seem to find them online, but you were selling them a while back, so maybe Caroline will get them again.
Yeah, I think we might be restocking those soon. They're Kai brand, I believe.
Yeah.
And they're really tiny and sharp. I love them too. Like when I use them at your place once,
yeah,
I was like, I need to get these for workshops.
Yeah,
because they're so good.
Mm-hmm. I love my ergonomic thimble. It's that like fancy looking one with the white kind of golf ball on one side and then the silicone green or blue straps on the other side, but it fits really well in the finger. It doesn't fall off. And the white side has these really deep divots in it that you can put the end of the needle in and actually stays on there, as opposed to that just textured metal finish on like a classic thimble. I find my needle just slips off all the time, whereas this one has like really deep divots. Love it. Also, gridded quilter ruler, all the sizes. I use the big ones, the little ones, the weird ones all the time. I just have so many quilting rulers everywhere, mm-hmm. and they're so handy. One thing I'll say is that the OmniGrid ones are the best. I had a Fiskars one, but all of the markings rubbed off of it.
Oh, okay.
Which is obviously no good.
Yeah.
That's the primary reason you have it. So I would go with the OmniGrid. And then my Chaco pens are my best friend when it comes to marking stuff. And I have all the colors.
Those are the Clover Choco Liner pens.
Yeah, the ones with the little rolly wheel on the end. And you can refill them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
I love those. I have some repeats on my list because we use the same tools.
Yeah.
But I wanted to put seam gauge on here because I use it all the time when I'm sewing, especially when I'm ironing hems or turning anything under like a pocket. I love using my little seam gauge. It's basically a small ruler with a plastic piece that you can slide through the ruler so that you can set, let's say I want a half inch seam allowance or an inch, and then use that when you're folding up as kind of a guide as you go. I find that really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I love my glass head pins. My favorite ones are the Clover silk pins. They have the glass head, so when you iron, you don't have to worry about the head of the pin melting under the heat of your iron. I just find that really comforting.
Yeah.
So, and they're strong and sturdy, and I really like them. Also, I think small, sharp snips are essential. I have like several different snips. I can't say I have a particular favorite. I do really love the Kai ones that you mentioned. I also really love, oh my gosh, I wish I remembered her name, but one of our amazing listeners sent us this pair of red snips.
I love those things.
And they're used for like cutting fishing line, right?
Yeah, they're the kind of snips that instead of opening them with your hand, you close them with your mm-hmm. hand. They look like a little, I don't know, like an alligator or something.
Yeah.
It's probably not a good description, but there's two kinds of snips. There's the kind you open and the kind that you close. And
these
are the pinchy ones.
I'm going to see if I can take a picture and maybe Melanie can share in the show notes. We can try to figure out where those are. You can find those online because they are really, really great.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much to that listener that sent those to us. It was so sweet. And I'm so sorry that we forget your name at this point.
I want to say Allison. But that's, I don't know.
Shot in the dark.
Shot in the dark.
I also have Choco liner pens on my list because I love them. I have them in all the colors.
Yeah.
The best tool. I think I have like multiple of every color in my toolkit. You just can't have enough Choco liner pens. And because I use it almost every time I work on a project, my seam ripper. I'm smart. Friends with my seam ripper.
Yeah.
We're on good terms and she's my favorite.
We're going to talk about seam rippers later.
Oh,
actually,
we will.
It's the first thing on the list. I just saw that.
Extremely important.
Extremely important.
So we kind of have split this up into like beginner, intermediate, advanced tools, and then some more specialty tools at the end of the episode. So let's start off with beginner sewing tools.
Yes, I strongly believe that you don't need a lot to get started with your sewing if you're a beginner. You only need a few well-chosen tools and don't get swayed by all the fancy stuff.
Yes. So the first thing on our list, as we mentioned, is the seam ripper.
Okay, so here's the thing about seam rippers. They're not all created equal.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's some scary ones.
There's some scary ones.
There's like the ones that are just like a blade.
Oh, yeah, those are like the razor blade ones. Mm-hmm. Go with the classic shape with the little red ball on the end, but buy one that has a nice handle because when you are seam ripping out things, you do want to have a pretty good handle. They also come in different sizes. You can get little itty bitty ones and you can get full size ones. I think the full size one is the better buy, again, because it's more comfortable when you're using it and you'll have more control. I do have a little itty bitty one that I use from time to time in tight spaces, but the bigger one is the one I go for.
Mm-hmm. And I really love the Clover brand white one. They also have a brown one, which is great. The white one is my favorite because it has like a little bit of plastic or silicone at the end. So it's like nice to grip. It's like hefty enough and it's really sharp because if you buy like a cheap dollar store seam ripper, it'll dull really quickly. So do keep that in mind if your seam ripper feels like, you know, it's not ripping your seam the way that you want it to, then you might need to replace it.
Yeah, maybe you're using like a third generation seam ripper that you got from a relative and it might just be done.
Yeah.
Time to upgrade.
All right. And then obviously you need scissors because you're going to be using scissors to cut out paper if you're cutting out a pattern, but you're also going to be using scissors for your fabric and you want to have a different pair of scissors for paper and fabric.
Yes. For your paper scissors, I highly recommend, again, getting something that has a good handle on it. I love my Fiskars scissors. They just have a really comfortable handle. Get whatever you need, right or left-handed, because if you're doing a lot of PDF pattern stuff at home, you're going to really be doing a lot of cutting and you will thank yourself for not having rinky-dinky little kids' craft scissors.
Mm-hmm. I'm also a big fan of Fiskars dressmaker shears. So I use Fiskars for my fabric cutting. They're really sharp. They're super affordable, like a really good price point. I think I found a listing on Amazon for like $18 for the 8-inch dressmaker shears. Like such a good buy. Really great. We use them for workshops too. They stay sharp for a really long time. And then of course, you'll also need some smaller snips. Would you say small snips are like essential? Could you just use your dressmaker shears next to your machine?
Dressmaker shears, I think they're too big and you run the risk of grabbing them too fast and accidentally cutting something you don't mean to. Mm. It's harder to get in and like cut things close to your project. I really think that having a pair of snips at every machine in your workstation is really important. Even like, you know, attach like a chain or something if you have to.
Yeah, I have like probably 5 or 6 pairs of small snips in different areas of my sewing room. Like it's nice to have them handy and you will probably accumulate them over time. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time you'll get that as like a free gift somewhere. You know, they're easy to find. So
I know some people like to wear them around their neck, which is cool, but I always worry that I'm going to sit down and stab myself.
Oh, me too. I don't do that.
But if you do that, I mean, more power to you.
All right. The next thing on our list is a tape measure. This is really important because, of course, if you're going to be sewing a garment, you want to measure your body and you want to do that often. So having like a dressmaker tape measure, which is that sort of soft plasticky material, wraps around your body really nicely. Don't use like a contractor tape measure. Take your measurement.
Oh my gosh.
Don't use string and then a ruler. I've seen people do that. Just get like a $2 tape measure. That's one of those things that you can buy cheap. I don't think you have to buy a fancy one.
No.
And just have that on hand. Have multiple on hand because I lose my tape measures all the time.
Yeah, me too. I like to have a few.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then what's next?
Pins and pin holder. You and I have differing opinions about pins. Mm-hmm. I know you love the smaller glass head ones. I love the Clover flower topped ones because they're so nice and long and sharp, and they're really easy, I think, to work with, to pick up off of the pincushion and then to put into your garments. They're just like way easier for me than the itty bitty ones. Maybe I'm just not that dexterous. And then some kind of pin holder. You can use a classic little tomato pin holder if you want, or really anything, right? Mm-hmm. Our friend uses a ceramic bowl that she brings to our sewing days. So yeah. You can use that if you want. You can get the magnetic ones. That's my preference because I love picking up all my pins with my magnetic pin holder. It just makes it a breeze to clean up.
Yeah. And if you want to do like a little hybrid, you can get like a cute ceramic bowl and then put magnets on the bottom, like hot glue magnets to the bottom. And then that'll be like your own little magnetic pin holder.
Yeah, you can pretty much use whatever.
Mm-hmm. And then you want to have some kind of a tool to mark your fabric. So either a fabric marker or fabric chalk. Fabric markers, we don't use them very often, but they do tend to fade over time. So if it's a project that you're going to mark and then sew the next week, then probably a chalk pen is a better way to go. Like we mentioned, we love those chalk liner pens, but you can also just get like a little tailor's chalk.
Triangle.
Yeah, the little triangle. They'll come in like a chalky material or like a waxy material.
Yeah.
The waxy material tends to stay on for longer
and breaks less.
And it breaks less. The chalky little triangles are not my favorite, but I like waxy ones. We use those in school a lot. But of course, diehard choco liner fan here.
I think that's the way to go if you're investing in your first marking tool. I know a lot of people like the Frixion pens, but I find it really annoying that they disappear with heat because if you mark your dart and then go over to the iron to like, you know, press down the middle, then all of a sudden it's like, bam, marking's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Seems highly impractical to me.
And then I think a seam gauge is really helpful, especially because, you know, you might not have any other rulers handy. Like, I don't think we even have rulers on this beginner sewing list, but
you have your measuring tape, which is 5/8, and that can be super handy for...
Ooh, a measuring tape is, most of them are 5/8.
Most of them.
Yeah. But yeah, a seam gauge I think is just really handy for hems. It's handy if you're at your machine and you want to just measure seam allowance.
Mm-hmm. Like, especially when you're a beginner, you might not be familiar with what 3/8 looks like versus 5/8 versus 1/2 inch. It's important to start familiarizing yourself with all those different seam allowances, when you should use them. And a seam gauge is a great way to get familiar with them.
Mm-hmm. And then you want to have assorted needles. So we're talking sewing machine needles and hand sewing needles. For the sewing machine needles, you can buy like a universal multi-pack if you're going to be using wovens, something that has different sizes of needles. So if you're using lightweight fabrics, go for the lighter needle. And if you're using heavier weight fabrics, go for the higher number needle. If you're working with knits, you want to get ballpoint needles and so on and so forth. So depending on your project, make sure you have the right sewing machine needles.
Yes.
And then hand sewing needles, you also want to have kind of different thicknesses.
Yeah.
Because if you're hand sewing, let's say a hem on a really delicate garment, you want a really light needle that's not going to make big holes and that's easy to slide through. But if you're doing like tailoring on a coat, then that'll be really hard to push through and kind of handle. So you probably want a heftier hand sewing needle.
I agree. Just get one of those little wheels that turn and spit out needles because you will lose them. So you can really never have enough hand sewing needles. And you can buy those little wheelie discs at any fabric store.
Definitely. And then we have thimble.
I added this in here. It wasn't on the beginner sewing list, but I think if we're recommending that people have hand sewing needles, they have to have a thimble. Of course, you can do it without one, but it's just so much worse. Just use the thimble when you do your hand sewing. It makes a world of difference. You want to put the thimble on your middle finger or your ring finger, hold your needle with your pointer finger and your thumb, and use the thimble to push the back of the needle through. That's how you properly use a thimble. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love it.
I love it.
I also put pincushion on here again because I feel like there's a difference between something that's going to hold your pins that you're going to use to kind of pin together seams or whatever versus a pincushion that you would put your hand sewing needles in. And if you're using, let's say, a magnetic pin holder, then you probably don't want to like mix your sewing needles in with your regular machine needles. So you might want to have like a separate pin cushion for your hand sewing needles. And that's also a really great scrap busting project.
I have a confession to make.
What's that?
When I'm done with my hand sewing, I just put the needle back in the twirly plastic thing.
That's okay, I think.
Is it? Then I don't know which ones are sharpened, which ones are used. But
how often would you need to like replace a hand sewing needle, do you think?
I don't know. It depends how much hand sewing you do.
Not very much.
All right. You also want to get a bunch of neutral color threads. Get your black, get your white, get your gray, maybe cream if you do sew a lot of those lighter colors, maybe like an olive green, a navy.
Yeah. Look at your wardrobe and the colors you wear most often
to use,
and pick out colors that match that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, a handful of bobbins for your sewing machine. That's essential. I have so many because I don't like to wind over color or take off thread from bobbins. So I just like, you know, buy 50 of them. don't worry about it.
Great. Yeah. And then you just have so many bobbins and it's great.
This episode is sponsored by Folkwear. Started in 1976, Folkwear is one of the oldest independent sewing pattern companies in the United States, with patterns for women, men, and children. All their patterns are based on authentic vintage and folk clothing from around the world. The patterns span hundreds of years and more than 30 countries.
Patterns also include historic, geographic, and cultural information about the garment and how it was traditionally made and worn, as well as instructions for traditional handwork, such as embroidery, thread, or applique. Folkwear's blog often highlights patterns, handwork, and sewing techniques. The blog also follows the owner, Molly, through her travels that involve textiles, fabric, sewing, and crafting.
Sign up for Folkwear's newsletter at folkwear.com to get a textile and sewing information-filled newsletter twice a month. You can also follow Folkwear on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter. For Love to Sew listeners, Folkwear is offering a 20% discount at folkwear.com with code LOVETOSEW at checkout. That's folkwear.com, promo code LOVETOSEW.
Okay, so let's move on to intermediate sewing. So this is for people that have decided that they want to pursue sewing maybe more seriously as a hobby. And so semi-regularly, we think there's a few tools that you could grab that are just going to kind of up your sewing game.
Mm-hmm. And not mentioned in this list, but again, a serger is a great investment at this point if you're in that advanced beginner to intermediate stage and you're doing a lot of sewing. And we have a whole episode on that, which is episode 92.
Yes.
First things first, if you're going to be cutting and sewing a lot of projects, you probably want to move away from cutting with scissors and pins, pinning your paper patterns to your fabric, moving to the glorious, wonderful, lovely world of rotary cutters and cutting mats.
Yes. Welcome. My preferred way to cut.
It is just so much more efficient. I know there are lots of people out there who are never going to convert to the rotary cutter method, and that's totally fine. If you love your scissors, that's great. But I do think that cutting mats and rotary cutters make things a lot easier, a lot faster, a lot less fiddly, and a lot less shifty. Like, you're not giving your fabric as much opportunity to move around, and so you are more likely to get an accurate cut.
Mm-hmm. Along with a cutting mat and rotary cutter, you're going to need pattern weights because you need something to weigh down your fabric as you're cutting around it. Some people might use pins, but I like to use pattern weights. My preferred pattern weights are hockey pucks because I just happened to have a bunch of hockey pucks when I started sewing when I was a kid. And I've just carried them around with me everywhere.
It's amazing. I love it.
And I also love, I learned this from you, the heavyweight washers that you can buy at the hardware store. Mm-hmm. The really, really big ones where you're like, what the heck is this even used for? Other than pattern weights, I don't know. You can grab those. Those are a good affordable option as well.
Yeah, I have a couple sizes. I have like a 2-inch size and then probably a 1.5 or maybe... That's probably 1.5-inch size for those smaller pattern pieces, mm-hmm. or those little areas that are smaller. And also on the note of rotary cutters, we forgot to mention that we both love the Ulfa rotary cutter that just like you just squeeze it and the blade comes out. And then when you're not squeezing it, the blade's back mm-hmm. in. I think that's the safest one personally. It does have a lock as well if you want to use the lock, but those ones are nice and sharp. They're affordable. It's great.
My favorite is the Ulfa 45 millimeter.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. the size for sure. I have a smaller one as well, but I rarely use it.
I use my smaller one for bra making, but we'll talk about that later.
Ooh, it's true. And for cutting mats, you can get custom cutting mats cut to the size of your table. What's the website?
Cuttingmats.net is the website where you can get those custom cutting mats. And I have them at Blackbird. You have one at Helen's Closet, HQ. And I mean, It's amazing.
It's a US-based company, but it's a little expensive, but it's well worth it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're trying to jam a bunch of those Fiskars mats up against each other so you can have enough space to cut out a pair of pants, you only need to do that a few times before you're like, okay. And if you have a sewing room, it just makes sense to have a cutting mat on your table. Of course, if you're just using your kitchen, dining room table, then it's probably not time for a cutting mat custom yet, but... You can work with the smaller ones. I have three sitting over there in the corner that I use when I'm at home.
And that works for you, right?
Yeah, you just butt them up against each other and then be really careful when you try to rotary cut over the gaps. You don't slip and cut your table.
Pinking shears are also handy to have around, using for trimming seams down if you don't want to overlock them. Maybe it's the inside of a garment where it's going to be lined and no one's going to see it. You can use pinking shears to finish those seam allowances. What else do you use pinking shears for?
I don't have pinking shears.
You don't?
I don't.
I do, but I honestly don't use them very often.
Yeah, I've just never needed them. I think that my preferred seam finish when I don't have access to a serger is to do a French seam or bias bound seam or something like that. Or an overcast stitch on my sewing machine. The pinked look just has never appealed to me.
Mm-hmm. But some people use them. So
yeah. In different crafts too. I think in quilting, they're used more frequently.
And then, as you mentioned earlier, an acrylic ruler, that's one of your favorite things to have around. Yes. One of those gridded rulers. I actually have a see-through ruler that's gridded. It's not as big as the Olfa, like gridded quilters rulers. It's like 2 inches wide. And I love it because it has centimeters on one side and inches on the other. Ooh. And I cannot for the life of me find a link for this online. I got mine locally at Can Sew, and I also had one when I was in school. Like, you can find them more at like dressmaker supply places.
You should try and get them for Blackbird.
I know, because they are really great. I love having the two
sides,
Imperial and metric, and they're not too big, they're not too hefty. Like, I wouldn't necessarily use it if you're a quilter and you're cutting, you know, a bunch of squares, but if you're just using it for drafting or pattern adjustments or just measuring things here and there, I think that are really handy.
So it's not see-through then?
It is see-through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's a see-through. We have them, we use them for workshops. It's like, it's not as like thick and beefy.
It's a little more floppy.
Yeah, it's a little bit more floppy.
Yeah, and it's like red on clear, right?
Blue on clear, but I've seen them red on clear too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I know the ones you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
But those are really great. I also love a French curve ruler for blending sizes. If you're grading between sizes, if there's a little bit of a curve, you want to try to keep that curve. You can freehand it.
Yeah.
But I like having a French curve it's got these different kind of angles of curves. Then you can sort of slide the ruler depending on the angle that you want, or flip it over depending on, you know, what you're tracing. And, great for pattern drafting as well, if you want to get into that.
Yeah, for sure. I do think it's fun to invest in those things that are going to make your life easier, like fabric glue sticks, like wonder tape, anything that you can use to speed things up a bit, be a bit more efficient, or just do those tasks that maybe you don't like doing as much faster.
Yeah. A point turner is also really handy. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in the jeans making toolkit section, but I also love using a point turner for turning collar corners, or, you know, any kind of corner that you need to turn out. Having a point turner is really helpful.
Yeah, I think so too. Don't use your scissors.
Oh, don't use your scissors. I've seen chopsticks. Yeah, that kind of works.
That works well.
You don't want to use anything too sharp, because then it could just like poke right through. And exactly. That's a disaster.
You can usually find something to use, but just buying a point turner eventually, because you're going to use it.
Yeah.
Also, investing in feet for your sewing machine. What are you sewing a lot of? What sewing feet could you get to help you with that? So you can get things like invisible zipper feet, overcasting feet, walking foot, an edge stitching foot. Highly recommend the edge stitching foot.
Mm-hmm.
A felling foot, a quarter inch foot for bra making, or if you're sewing a lot of knits. There's just so many feet out there, and it's just another fun area of sewing to explore as well, because you can, and there's all these options that are going to help you. And feet are so pretty, I think. I love looking at the different kinds and all of those little metal bits and folds and gizmos, and I don't know. It's cool.
If you sew with a lot of delicate fabrics, a rolled hem foot is really cool. I don't know if you've ever used one of those, but they are super fun because they have this little like spiral, and you basically have to feed the fabric through and sort of push it just the right way so that it turns it right before it sews it. And then you come out with this teeny tiny little rolled hem. And yeah. It's just, it looks very professional and very fancy.
Yeah. So it's pretty magical. There's also a foot for bias binding where you can feed the binding right in and then it prepares it for you while it's sewing it. It's amazing.
So cool. And we did talk about needles briefly earlier, but making sure that you have that collection of appropriate needles. So if you're upping your game, then you probably want to start getting denim needles or leather needles or those really heavyweight needles for coat making or
Microtex
for bra making or jersey ballpoint needles, that kind of thing.
Stretch needles for elastic.
Mm-hmm. And then we also love the idea of a pin wrist cushion. Past guest Evelyn Wood has a YouTube video on how to DIY your own pin wrist cushion, but that's just like a really legit little accessory to have as a sewist, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally think so. You can just have your pins on you all the time.
Love it.
And some extra things around your ironing board as well. So pressing ham, amazing. You really want to have one of these once you start getting into sewing darts or doing any kind of tailoring on jackets and things like that. It's really handy to have a pressing ham that you can press your garments on. Also a sleeve roll along those lines. So something that you can put inside of sleeves or pants so you can get at those seams so you can press them appropriately. And a sleeve pressing board, which is great for not only ironing while you're sewing, but also ironing your shirts after you've made them. The whole family could use the sleeve pressing board.
Mm-hmm. For the pressing ham, it's kind of funny that it's called a ham, but I wonder if our beginner sewists don't even know what that is.
That's true.
It's kind of like a oval shaped.
It's ham shaped. That's why it's called a ham.
But not all hams are the same shape.
Not all ovals are the same shape.
That's oh, true. What? Okay, well, the point is that it's rounded, yes. Right? So you're able to press those areas that aren't flat, which you'd be surprised how often you need something like that. Princess seams, you mentioned darts, also like setting in a sleeve.
Even shoulder seams. If your shoulder seam's a bit longer, you have a dropped shoulder and it's on a beautiful curve, you could press that on your ham.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Also, silk organza press cloth.
Yes. If you're going to get one press cloth, get a silk organza one because you can use it on pretty much everything. It's see-through and you want a press cloth to protect your fabric from your iron. You may notice as you start sewing and you're going to encounter some iron situations where your fabric's going to do some weird things. It might get shiny. You might burn it. It might wrinkle up and like start to shrivel, which is the pre-burning stage. all sorts of weird things can happen and you do have to be really careful with irons and fabric. So press cloths are a great tool for that. And the silk organza, like I said, is see-through. So you're not pressing blind, which you kind of are if you're using a cotton press cloth. But cotton works well too.
Mm-hmm. And silk is nice because it can take really, really high heat. So you can use your silk press cloth with like linen and wool and not have to worry about it like getting scorched.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are making a lot of shirts as an intermediate sewist, then we definitely love the buttonhole cutter or a buttonhole chisel, which is basically like a little tiny long chisel that you use to cut open your buttons.
Tiny long.
Tiny long. It's tiny on the end, but it's long.
It's pretty short. I mean, have you seen a woodworker's chisel? They're like,
oh, I guess
12 inches at least.
But it's okay. Proportionally long.
Being very critical of you today. I'm so sorry.
That's fine. We were up early.
It's a small chisel that you just press down into your buttonhole with your cutting mat underneath to cut it open. So you're not risking getting in there with a pair of scissors or, heaven forbid, your seam ripper.
Do not do that.
And along with the buttonhole cutter, some fray check, you can put this on before you cut open your buttonholes. It just helps to sort of set all of those stitches from when you made your buttonhole and prevent them from fraying after you cut it open. I like to put some fray check on the front and the back before I cut it open, and then I put it on again after I cut it open.
Do you ever test the fray check on like a scrap piece of fabric? Because I've heard horror stories about fray check like staining fabric.
I would check if it was like silk or something. Mm-hmm. But most of the button-up things I make are cotton or linen or... Yeah.
When you first put it on, the fabric gets like kind of dark and it looks wet because it is wet.
Yeah.
But it does generally fade and you can't see it.
Exactly.
But if you're worried, I'll just do a test.
It is a good idea to check. It's true. Do I check? No.
I also think having tweezers on hand. A lot of the time this comes with a sewing machine, but I'm thinking, for example, if you're buying like a vintage sewing machine, it might not have all those little like maintenance accessories. So for me, tweezers are really great for threading a sewing machine or a serger. I also love having a really good lint brush. So that's just like a tiny little lint brush that's meant for cleaning the inside of your sewing machine, getting all that lint out, along with sewing machine oil, and a mini screwdriver. So that's also for machine maintenance or changing out your needle. Again, a lot of the stuff comes with a new sewing machine, but if you have a vintage one, it might not be there. Great thing to have on hand.
Mm-hmm. And if you do have a vintage machine and you don't have any of that stuff that came with the original, with it when it was originally purchased, you can often find the manual online for your sewing machine. And then that way you will know where to put things like sewing machine oil and where to unscrew things to get at other areas. It's important for you to have that manual. So definitely try and hunt it down. Mm-hmm. And while you were talking about tweezers, I realized we didn't put on here needle threaders, but they're really, really handy for people who have a bit poorer eyesight. It's hard to thread the needle. Just get yourself one of those little silver discs with the little wire loop on the end that helps you to thread your machine needle.
Love it. Easy peasy. Tip. All right. So our advanced toolkit. Yes. Getting real.
For those of you that sew a lot, all the time, can't get enough.
Some of these things are a little bit pricier, but it's definitely, if you're sewing a lot, worth the investment.
Yes. And an opportunity for you to splurge on yourself if you've been in this hobby for a little while and you just want to reward yourself for all the hard work you've been doing. Mm-hmm. So you can get a dress form, and these have a wide range of prices. You can get the expandable kind of ones that you see often at fabric stores. Those ones, I don't know, around like $200 to $300.
Yeah, I think it probably depends on the brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you can go all the way to like luxury custom dress form, like Beatrice forms, for example. So whatever way you decide to go, dress forms can be really handy because then you have something to put your garment on when you're working on it, and you can assess fit without having to try it on and try and crane your neck looking at your butt in the mirror. I mean, obviously, most dress forms don't actually have accurate butts, but you know what I mean. It's hard sometimes to get an accurate read. It's nice to be able to step back and look at something a bit more objectively.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. A bias tape maker is really handy if you're using that finish a lot, or if you're sewing garments that take bias tape. You can get the little ones that are kind of handheld and you just use them with your iron. There's also, I don't think they're actually making these anymore, but Simplicity used to make like a machine, like it's a little tiny machine that makes bias tape for you.
What?
It's so cool. I so regret not buying one because one of my suppliers used to have them and they don't anymore.
Maybe you could find one of those things you could find on eBay.
I know. I'm going to try to find a vintage one because, yeah.
You should do that now before the episode comes out.
Pause for Googling. But yeah, they're super cool. And if you make a lot of bias tape, like totally worth the investment.
Yeah, exactly.
Bias tape's a pain in the A to do.
Another thing you can grab is a loop turner, which is great for straps, great for drawstrings. You can, of course, use a safety pin or bobby pin to turn belts and straps and things, but a loop turner just makes it even more easy. Mm-hmm. And it's a cool tool.
Yeah, there's different types too. There's some that have like an outer kind of
sheath.
Yeah. And then the inside, and then the one that I have is just like a long piece of metal, and there's like a little hook on the end with like a little piece that locks up. So you hook it through the end and then you pull it through.
Yeah.
There's all different kinds. So very cool. I love loop tuners. They're very handy.
Yeah. They're also called bodkins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you might see them labeled as that.
Cool. All right. So you can also get an extension table. I don't know what that is, though.
Oh, it's just an extra piece that fits on the side of your sewing machine to give you more workspace.
Oh, okay.
Super handy if you're into quilting, but it also works really well for garment sewing. I don't personally have one, and I've never really felt the need to get one, but I can see how it would be super handy.
Mm-hmm. My machine came with one of those, but I don't use it because I like working on a smaller surface.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you can get in there more, you know?
Also, one of those expandable gauges for button placement on shirts. Those are so fun. They're like those lattice work metal gauges that you expand and then contract and it's kind of like playing an accordion or something. Mm-hmm.
They're so cool. I love those.
So it just helps you space out your buttons down the front of your shirt. However you want to space them, you can adjust the gauge accordingly.
So this next one is by no means fancy, but I always have a little jar of toothpicks in my sewing room because they're really great for when you're hand sewing buttons on a coat. You need to have a little bit of extra room in between the button and the fabric to accommodate for the other fabric that's going to be going around the button. You need some space there or else it just kind of ends up looking really squished and just
harder
not
to do up
tidy
too.
And it is harder to do up. So having a toothpick, you kind of put that in underneath your button. Our friend Tassia taught this to me, and you just sew on the button with it like around the toothpick, and then you just pull the toothpick out, and then you've got that spacer in there.
Yeah, I totally do the exact same thing with toothpicks, and it works like a charm.
Yeah.
Lastly here, we have a sketchbook. A good sketchbook that already has croquis drawn into it can be amazing because then you can sketch out all your ideas. You can use also something like My Body Model to create a croquis that looks more like you. You could trace a croquis of yourself, but just having the option to sketch on a croquis is really nice. So the Fashionary is a great example of a sketchbook that has croquis in it. I also love the Gertie sketchbook. Can't remember exactly what it's called, but we will link it in the show notes.
Cashmerette has one too, like a curvy one.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's tons out there. There's free downloadable ones. There's ones that you can buy that are a little bit prettier, but that's a great thing to have on hand, especially if you're leveling up.
Yeah, for sure.
What about hand sewing tools? We're getting into the more specialty arena, I think, at this point.
I mean, it depends who you're talking to. Brooksanne Camper would say that these tools are essential.
That's true.
But if you are going to be doing some more hand sewing or you just really enjoy hand sewing, you can get some beeswax to go along with your hand sewing. So you run your thread through the beeswax, over the beeswax to just get it to be nice and smooth and straight before you go into your hand sewing. And that helps you not get a lot of tangles.
Mm-hmm. I also love using Thread Heaven, which has been discontinued, but you can still find it in some places.
Yeah.
And I think there's another one called Thread Magic that's really similar. It's just like a thread conditioner, works the same way as a beeswax. It just helps that thread slide through your garment more easily and not get those knots.
Yeah, totally. High quality needles. We talked about buying that little multi-pack that you can buy at a fabric store, but you can also invest in some more high quality Japanese needles. Susan Calji mentioned a particular brand that she sells on her website. So we'll link that in the show notes as well if you want to up your game with your needles.
Woohoo! And of course, we've already mentioned this on the show, a good thimble is a really great thing to have in your sewing room. So try a few different ones out, find your favorite. We love the ergonomic ones, but there are tons of options out there. So just figure out which one you like.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, what about jeans? I know that you are a big jeans sewer and you have lots of fun jeans making tools in your toolkit and also in your shop.
Yes. So for jeans making, you definitely, if you're going to be putting in hardware, you'll need a few things. Not all of them are meant specifically for jeans making. A lot of them are tools that you might have around already. You're going to want to have a hammer. So the hammer is for hammering in your rivets and buttons. You also need wire cutters. So a lot of the time, those rivets and buttons need to be trimmed down depending on the thickness of your denim and your project. So those are used for that. Tailor's clapper is really helpful for flat felt seams. So if you're doing flat felt seams in your jeans, after you press the seam, you hold down the clapper and it basically locks all the moisture and heat into the fabric and kind of sets that seam nice and flat. You can also use this tool for non-jeans projects like coat making. It's really helpful for those thick, hefty wool seams, but it's great for jeans because jean seams can get quite bulky.
Yeah. And speaking of bulkiness, you might want to get a hump jumper. We've mentioned this a few times on the show, but it's essentially a little piece of plastic that you put under the back of your presser foot, and you can put the hump jumper on at a time where you know you're going to come up onto a bulkier section. So the hump jumper helps to lift the foot to the same height of whatever it is that you're sewing onto, and then you take it off once you're back on a regular level. And you can buy hump jumpers, but we have mentioned this on the show before, you can use little sewing machine needle packets. They're usually a pretty good thickness for hump jumping when you're sewing jeans and coats. So try that out and see if it works for you.
Mm-hmm. When you're doing those buttons and rivets, you want to have an awl. So you can get just like a standard awl or you can get a tailor's awl. You want to make sure it's not too thick. So you want to get one that's nice and fine. It's kind of like a sharp pointed tool that looks like a small screwdriver and it has a pointed edge, and that's basically used to create holes in your garments that you can insert the post of the rivet or buttons through that hole. Totally seems scary when you're going into it. You're like, I just finished making a pair of jeans and now I have to make holes in it. But just think of it as part of the process.
Yes.
It's going to help to make those rivets and buttons set in really nicely. You could also use a nail and a hammer.
I've done that when I can't find my awl.
Yeah, but awls are really great, and especially the really nice sharp tailor's ones are really helpful. And then finally, for doing your buttons and rivets, you want to have like a hard metal or cast iron surface to hammer on. You don't want to do it on any kind of soft surface, like even flooring or like a wood table. You definitely don't want to use that. You need something very, very hard. So a little mini anvil is really cute and handy. If you do a lot of jeans making, it might be worth the investment. You can also just use a cast iron skillet, like the back of a cast iron pan, mm-hmm. as long as it's not like greasy or,
yeah.
you know, make sure that it's nice and clean. Mm-hmm.
But you won't wreck your pan.
Yeah, I've done you won't. This
and it's surprising. Mm-hmm. You're not denting that thing.
Yeah. And then also you can use like a little jewelry bench block. I've yeah. seen those used before. They're just these small kind of heavy, thick metal blocks that are super handy for putting in rivets and buttons.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have invested in all of these things since taking the jeans making class at Workroom Social, and now I make a lot of my own jeans, and it's so nice to have all of the tools, and it just makes it feel like you've got it going on.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. You're profesh.
Definitely.
And also another sort of area of sewing that you might want to dabble in is bra making. And there's some things that you could get for bra making, such as we mentioned, a tiny rotary cutter can be super handy for cutting out all those tiny pieces. We use the 28 millimeter Olfa cutter. Mm-hmm. The applique or duckbill scissors that I mentioned at the top of the show that I love are essential for bra making and underwear making, because you're going to be doing a lot of seam grading and you're going to want to get in there in between all those lace folds and elastic, and just make sure that you're not cutting anything you shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. And that quarter inch foot for your sewing machine is super helpful, because with bra making, a lot of the time the seam allowances are all quarter inch. So it's really nice to have that foot handy that is just easy to line it up, because quarter inch is quite small. So it's not intuitive if you're used to sewing with 5/8 of an inch. So having that foot is really helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
So we are going to link all of these items in the show notes. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, we have that Amazon storefront that you can use to shop these items all in one place. And we do want to mention that these links are affiliate links. So we do make a small commission if you purchase that item, if you end up purchasing something from Amazon through those links. So we wanted to be upfront about that and let you guys know that if you do that, it helps us out just a little bit.
It's a great way to support the show, because it's no extra cost to you. And instead of Amazon getting all that money, we get some of it, which is great.
There we go.
All right. So let us know what your favorite items are in your toolkit. We're going to share on social media, post about all of these items, and you can weigh in and comment about which of them you like, which of them you don't like, something that we missed, your favorites. We want to hear all about it. And tag us on Instagram or in your stories if you're sharing your favorite tools, because we want to share those kinds of stories too.
Yes. This episode is sponsored by Folkwear. Folkwear provides high-quality sewing patterns for women, men, and children based on authentic vintage and folk clothing from around the world.
The patterns are perfect for anyone who wants to make unique garments, learn about traditional clothes, and connect with culture. Love to Sew listeners can get 20% off their order at folkwear.com using the promo code LOVETOSEW. That's folkwear.com, code LOVETOSEW. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in cold Vancouver, Canada. Like, so cold, you guys.
It's 3 degrees.
My windshield this morning. You can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode, and you are going to want to do that at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month, and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed, possibly even a discount code if you go to the $10 tier. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thank you to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. As promised, here is a sneak peek from a recent bonus episode. We survived frog tales.
We did. We more than survived. I think we conquered.
Yes, we really did. How did it go for you?
So good. I was really thankful when the event finally happened that we had put so much effort into organizing it and that we had plans in place for everything and our co-organizers, it wasn't just us, we had three other people on our team, really made the night a success. And it went off without a hitch, I would say.
It really did.
Yeah. It all came together.
It was such a nice evening. Like, we kind of knew it was going to fly by going into it. We were like, it's only 3 hours. It's going to, like, we're going to blink and it's going to be over.
Yeah.
And
enjoy it.
Yeah. So I was really trying to be conscious of that while I was there and just like soak in every moment and take every opportunity to talk to as many people as I could.
Yeah.
And just really like enjoy the environment, because it was such a great space as well be in, just a really like warm and fuzzy location. And so everybody was just so happy to be there and to get to socialize with other people that sew. So it was a magical evening.
It really was. Yeah. It looked beautiful. The twinkly lights and the pretty balloons and the lovely food. And oh my gosh. Did you have any highlights?
Ooh, well, I really loved the fashion show.
Me too.
Of course. I knew I was going to love the fashion show. We got that idea from Camp Workroom Social last year. There was a little fashion show and we weren't sure what it was going to be like. And then once we watched it happen, we were like, oh my God, this is the most fun. And so we wanted to do it at Frogtails. And I really loved just watching people kind of strut their stuff and show off what they made. Show their personality.
Yeah. And much like camp, after the fashion show, when I was talking to people about it, they're like, oh, I wish I had participated. Like, I was nervous when I heard about it, didn't sign up. And then when I was watching everybody walk the runway, I was like, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there listening ever gets a chance, just sign up. It's so fun.
Yeah. Especially a fashion show with all sewists
around cheering.
You. Yeah.
And like really looking at your clothes, like they're excited about the pattern. They're like, ooh, I want to make that.
Yeah.
It's great. It was so fun.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment in the fashion show was Laura Malley leading with her clutch, like drag race style.
Yes.
She like put on her sunglasses first. And like put the clutch out. And like, I was like, I get this reference. This is so good.
Yeah.
And I loved Laura's outfit as well. I mean, I loved everyone's outfit. There were some amazing outfits. I was thinking afterwards, like, I wish we could do some kind of like who wore it best, like show or something, little like talk show or not who wore it best, but just like showing photos of the highlights of like our favorite dresses.
Oh yeah.
But it would be hard to choose.
What are you wearing? Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some crazy jumpsuits, some amazing dresses.
Oh my gosh.
Boiler suits. I don't know. There's
a
everything.
Full, like pink suede
fringe
dress with fringe going from like the sleeve all across the back and the other sleeve, like really long fringe. It was so good.
It was so beautiful. I got to touch that fringe and it was the softest thing. Mm-hmm. yeah, I think the runway was a highlight for me as well. There's actually a video of me walking the runway on Instagram.
There is.
So
I saw that.
Maybe we can put that in the Patreon show notes.
Yeah. I think
it's a little embarrassing, cringy for me to watch, but it was really fun.
I totally blacked out for that moment. Like, I was really nervous and I was like, I don't even know how this is gonna go. Like, as long as I don't trip, I'm good. And I think I was smiling so wide that I like couldn't even see. Like, my eyes were so squinty. I was like, I'm just not gonna make eye contact with anyone. And I just did it and it was over and it was fine.
it was awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun. Did you have any, what was your highlight?
Definitely the runway.
The runway.
Yeah.
What about embarrassing moments?
I mean, I always put my foot in my mouth every time we have an event at some point, but I think my most embarrassing moment from Frogtails was when our MC was like introducing us and I like got up on the, I went first, he introduced me first and I like stepped up on the stage and like waved and like realized that we weren't doing that.
No, I was, I think the only we were one supposed to do that.
Okay.
Because going into it, Jill was like, we're each going to get up on the stage, but then
that's
it just like didn't continue.
Well, y'all made me look real dumb because I got up there and was like, hey, everybody. And even the MC was kind of like, oh, okay.
Maybe it wasn't communicated to him because he could have like kind of, you know, ushered us onto the stage,
yeah.
But he didn't do that. And then you got off the stage and I was like, do I get on the stage? So I just stayed off the stage. It was, yeah.
Breakdown. And not every moment can be perfect.
Oh my gosh.
If you want more bonus content from Love to Sew, you can support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info. Talk to you next week.
Thanks.